Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yeah. What's going on, folks? It's your host of the Boxing Source Radio Show, James Bell, here live on Blog Talk Radio. We are here Sunday, October 18, 2015, live. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. You press the number one key to get on cue. You'll be live on the show. Just to let y'all know, this is the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. MRN Broadcast was started by Matthew Long and Claudel Mathis, and we have two sister shows on the network. Starting off with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports with the execution of Matthew Long Tuesday night at 8:30. And on Wednesday at 8:30, we have the CMT Firestone Football Talk Show with Cali Mike, Chi-Town Claudel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South Tony Watley, along with other guests on that show. So make sure you catch those there during the week. We have a real packed show this week. As we had a lot of fights going on over the week, starting from, early on, like Tuesday, going through up until Saturday night with the main event that they had with Gennady Golovkin and David Lemieux. So we will be getting into that and more on this show. But first off, I'm going to get some commercials out of the way. So let's get to those right quick, and then we'll be getting back on live.
The Cold Hard Truth on Sports, every Tuesday at 8:30 p.m. on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. The Executioner, Matthew Long, talks about different topics in sports, which include football, basketball, baseball, hockey, boxing, and more. The Executioner also invites special guests to talk about different topics within the sports world. So be sure that you catch the Cold Hard Truth on Sports every Tuesday night at 8:30 p.m. on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Claudel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch the callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestone Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcasting Network.
That's why we're here to sing football.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
All right, we are back here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press number one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. All right, we're pretty much going to get into it here with what we have for the topics. We did have a few good fights going on in the sport over the week, as we had a few fights going on in the middle of the week. Then going up into this weekend, where we basically saw a few fights, a few good fights here and there. You know, one was in the pay-per-view that we had. We had a pretty good fight in there. Plus, we had that main event between Golovkin and Lemieux. And also the day before, on Friday, we had a very good fight in the light heavyweight division between Andre Bumpara and Nathan Cleverly there. So we did have that plus. We did see that we had fights here where we had probably a shocking result on Premier Boxing Champions earlier this week when Devin Alexander went up against his opponent and seemed like he was unmotivated there in his last fight against Aaron Martinez up in Glendale, Arizona. So we will be touching that as well, but you're probably going to, you know, go with the top and then go backwards. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start off with, you know, the main event that happened last night at Madison Square Garden when we had the middleweight titles, a lot of the middleweight titles on the line when Gennady Golovkin went up against David Lemieux in Madison Square Garden. David Lemieux put up his IBF championship on the line, and Gennady Golovkin had, you know, multiple belts that he put up there on the line, which included the interim WBC middleweight championship and the WBA championship for the WBA at 160 pounds. I mean, they tried to basically build up this fight. It was a very big fight. It was the first pay-per-view for Gennady Golovkin and David Lemieux to be put up there for him. So there, and everything seemed to, people seemed to get pretty excited for the bout, but one of the things that was noticeable leading up to the fight was that Gennady Golovkin was a 15-1 favorite going up to the fight, which when you have somebody that, you know, is a champion in the division and is among the top 10 in some rankings out there as far as middleweights are concerned, but was basically a 17-1 favorite or a 17-1 underdog against Golovkin, then that should have told a lot of people there that, you know, that he really didn't have that much of a chance against Golovkin. Golovkin had the height advantage, had the reach advantage, and everybody knew that he was the more skilled fighter. In order for Lemieux to have a chance against Gennady Golovkin, he would have to be able to shake off the offensive skill that Golovkin had. And you saw straight off the bat that Golovkin was able to land with the jab at will from round one. I mean, he landed over 20 jabs. It was like round
probably around 23 to 27 jabs landed in round one, and that was basically set the tone for the rest of the fight. Lemieux didn't do anything to nullify the jab. He didn't use any head movement. He didn't move around the ring. He didn't use his feet to kind of get around from that and come up with the counter. He kind of like looked to try to just get, you know, a big shot here and there to try to throw off Golovkin. And when he didn't have that reach advantage that Golovkin had and tried to, you know, get to the inside, he couldn't really do that for the first three or four rounds. And, you know, he eventually succumbed to the skill of Gennady Golovkin. And it could have ended earlier than that. He was basically knocked down in round five and could have been taken out there or in round six, but was able to stay in there for a few more rounds up until round eight. He had a busted nose. While it didn't affect his vision, he was still there for the taking for Gennady Golovkin to just continue with his game plan, using the jab. He didn't really have to mix up his offense against David Lemieux in order to win that fight. So you had that basically to that basically just shows how far ahead Gennady Golovkin is in the middleweight division right now in comparison to the other contenders that they have. I mean, you did have David Lemieux out there. You do have Miguel Cotto and Canelo Alvarez about to fight on November 21st for the WBC and Ring Magazine Middleweight Championship. And you also have a couple of other contenders out there, such as Andy Lee, who will be fighting Billy Joe Saunders. You do have Daniel Jacobs that will face Kid Chocolate, Peter Quinlan. And you do have Turiano Johnson, who did win a fight earlier in the card against Hermano Cain to become the number one contender for the IBF Middleweight Championship. So while Golovkin does have those options, most likely you do have Turiano Johnson, that's a more likely opponent. Not sure about the Billy Joe Saunders Andy Lee winner, but Andy Lee would probably be game to fight Golovkin, but I doubt that he'll have much of a chance against him. So right now Golovkin is really eager to see if the Cotto Canelo winner will be able to face him next year to come up with a very huge pay-per-view. We've said it many times all year that Miguel Cotto will not face Gennady Golovkin. Cotto will not face Gennady Golovkin, so I do not see that fight happening if Cotto wins. He may just end up giving up that belt if the WBC orders Cotto to fight Gennady Golovkin for that WBC belt. So that was so that's not going to happen. So we will probably see Canelo. If Canelo wins, then you'll see Canelo go up against Gennady Golovkin. Will it happen within the first half of 2016? Not really, because with the fact of David Lemieux going right there in the ring against Gennady Golovkin yesterday, that takes away one of the leading guys that Golden Boy Promotions has. The number one guy in Golden Boy Promotions is Canelo Alvarez. And right now,
they're really banking on Canelo to be the number one draw in the sport with Floyd's retirement. So with that being known, you'll have to see what Canelo does here against Miguel Cotto on November 21st and then see what happens after that. Most likely, if Canelo wins the middleweight championship in the WBC, then they'll probably put him up against somebody else that's within the middleweight division before they even think about trying to put Canelo up there against Gennady Golovkin, which would put Golovkin in a bad situation if you think about it, because he is now a pay-per-view fighter, and while they might not have the numbers that they really want to get, which is, I would say, around 300,000 to 400,000 pay-per-view buys is probably what they want to get out of Golovkin. That would be another tough thing to do for his next fight, because if he's not facing Canelo or Cotto, he will have to see if he can find another middleweight contender out there. And somebody like a Toriano Johnson or an Andy Lee or a Chris Eubank Jr. wouldn't give him the numbers that, you know, he would need in order to get the most successful returns out of being in a pay-per-view type of event. So you'll have to see what they're going to be able to do with Golovkin as a pay-per-view draw on HBO. As far as David Lemieux is concerned, I mean, he was there. He stepped up to take that fight. Skills-wise, he wasn't able to hang with Golovkin. And like I said, that was shown right in the first round when Golovkin was able to jab him at will. So he wasn't able to be successful against Gennady Golovkin. Well, and I don't think that would be that much of a setback for him. I mean, he was a huge underdog. If he was able to get the win, it would have been a huge upset, but he wasn't able to do it. So he could just move on and just go to maybe another fight to get back to speed before he really challenges for any other type of belt that's out there that may be left. He could face Andy Lee if Andy Lee is not able to face Gennady Golovkin, and a Lemieux-Andy Lee fight would be a great fight, whether it's in Canada or somewhere where it would be a high Irish contingent of fans. They could put that together, and that would be a pretty good fight in the middleweight division. But as of right now, Lemieux is not good enough to hang with Gennady Golovkin at this point. So that pretty much gives my summary in reference to that fight. The one before that had who many people feel right now is the pound-for-pound number one boxer in the sport, Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez, and he faced Brian Valoria. But before we go into that, we'll have 813. What's going on here, 813?
Jay Beasy, what's going on? Just Terrell, just checking in. How's it going?
Doing good there, brother Terrell. I'm good. Basically getting back into speed. You know, I didn't have a show last week because of what happened up in Miami. So, you know, I'm still trying to recover from all of that.
Yeah, actually, I've been looking at some postings and some blogs. You're a wanted man down there for some of the fade activity. I'm just saying. So you might want to lay low for a while. You know what I'm saying? Especially that boat ride. I heard about that boat ride. Wow. And everything, you know.
Man, I'm telling you that yeah, that boat ride, man, like I was saying, that boat ride, that's the last boat ride we're going to have in Miami, because we just, like, completely went out there for that one, man.
I'm not sure what you did, but there's some fluffy girl from Guyana looking for you. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, I know I'm not going anywhere close to Guyana, so, hey. So whoever's looking for me around there, they won't be able to see me. I'll tell you that.
Hey, I gave her a number to the show today. She's supposed to call it so she can talk to you and everything, because you've been dissing her.
True.
So, yeah, man. I was just getting on to, you know, what was happening there on Saturday night. And I had my quick synopsis of Gennady Golovkin's win over David Lemieux. What did you think about the matchup and how it panned out?
Well, you know, we talked about this fight several different times. I didn't see the fight because I was with my daughter for her birthday weekend this weekend, but I definitely read about it. I actually saw some live feeds on a couple of blog sites for round by round coverage. And actually what's interesting to me is, like, when we talked about this about a month ago, one point I made back then was I said the fact that Golovkin is naturally bigger than Lemieux and everything. So I appreciate Lemieux's body work. I certainly appreciate his power, but we do know that a lot of times the bigger man can prevail and oftentimes will prevail unless the skill level of that smaller guy is just so high. And in this case, this I think it's pretty funny because we all know Lemieux came to fight. But and Lemieux came to fight, but basically Golovkin is a beast. Now, we do know, as Chris on this show will point out, he does need to fight more people, more top people, namely a Ward or somebody like that. But even demonstrating this just on this fight right here against Lemieux, I mean, he walked through this guy from the ground. And, you know, and from this point, Lemieux had really not much to offer. I mean, there were moments when Lemieux got some good shots in and stuff like that. Good. I mean, he's supposed to. He's a champ. But he practically walked through Lemieux, you know. And that's it.
Yeah.
I think the main factor was the fact that he is the bigger, stronger guy at that weight, you know. And and what's funny about that, about the aftermath of this, where does Golden Boy go with Lemieux now? Because they were banking on this guy getting a win. Oh. That didn't happen. So there's so many different things that's coming as a result of this fight. What's going forward for Golovkin? What goes forward for you? Also for his promoter as well, because we do know that Hopkins and B-Hop, I'm sorry, De La Hoya were hey, yeah. I mean, that's what they're supposed to pay the hype of the fight. So he has a great chance. Well, he got destroyed. Your man got destroyed. And you know, didn't look good. But going forward with Golovkin, I mean, sensational performance. I mean, actually, I know he hasn't fought the top people yet. And, I mean, really, the only logical fight for Golovkin Triple G is Ward. That's the only logical fight. And truthfully, I mean, at the middleweight division, who else is out there that he can fight? That can really give him a fight and a threat, be a threat to him. I'd like to see a list. I really would. Ward's the only guy that's going to beat him. Only guy.
Yeah. My thing is that with Golovkin, I think that he says his intentions are to unify the belt in the middleweight division first, which I kind of understand that, and that would be kind of possible. So if Andy Lee is able to retain. And, Canelo is able to, you know, beat Cotto, then by 2016, he might be able to make that happen. But as far as facing Ward is concerned, I don't know if that's going to be possible because Ward has, you know, already, you know, basically said he's moving on up to light heavyweight. His last fight was at 172 pounds. And his next his next fight will probably be around that same range. So we'll see what they're going to be able to do, because Ward is really on the crash course to face Sergey Kovalev next year, as Kathy Duva and Rock Nation are really negotiating to make that happen. Real quick, we have 205 on the line. What's going on?
What's going on, James? It's Mike Grady, man. How you doing?
Doing all right, man. Doing all right. How you been?
Been pretty good. Just, you know, feel like I would share my opinion on the fight. That's all.
Yeah, go ahead and do that.
Yeah, so coming into the fight, I kind of expected, you know, I didn't think that he would dominate the fight as much as he did, talking about Golovkin, but I always expect a better boxer to outperform, with everything else being similar or equal, the brawler. So going into it, you know, you can already expect Golovkin to control Lemieux, because Lemieux can't box better than him. And then he did the simplest thing that you can ever do to win the fight, which is jab. And so from him jabbing the whole fight, everything else followed from that. I know the point I'm about to bring up is, even though he dominated the fight, he probably would have stopped him in one or two more rounds. I have a problem with them calling their fighters. Like, yes, he controlled the fight. Yes, Lemieux probably was not going to win, but Lemieux still had a puncher's chance. Do I think he was going to land the punch? I think he probably would have landed one punch. Would it have hurt Golovkin enough to like take him out? No. But Golovkin fades later. You know, I haven't seen him like in the what's his name? The guy who hit him the most times, his last fight.
Willie Monroe Jr.
I felt like he would have got hit a little bit more. Yeah, Lemieux was fading a lot quicker, and he probably wouldn't have hit him that much, but I feel like Golovkin would have got hit just a little bit more had they let the fight continue going, because at that point in time, he started feeling desperate because he knew, you know, it wasn't going to last much longer, but the referee was already – in round two, he was looking to stop the fight, you know? Like, it just – the same thing happened with Canelo. Canelo, when he fought
did you say
what's
you
the other Mexican guy?
Desperate?
No, Lemieux would have gotten desperate because he knew it was about to be over, because Golovkin really started pressing him and, you know, pushing the action on him. The point I'm making is that they did the same thing with Canelo when Canelo fought El Perro, Angulo. And, yeah, Angulo was taking a bunch of punishment. Yeah, he probably wasn't going to win the fight, but Canelo fades late. Also, and so.
Yeah, that's true. The
fight would have been a lot more interesting. Do I think that would have happened with Lemieux? No, but we'll never know, because they do that with the fighters who fade late. They stop the fight early, and you know, people don't get what they pay for. I mean, it was already, you know, I don't see why it was a pay per view personally, but I guess that's the money side of boxing. So,
good win.
HBO
didn't have a choice.
Yeah, you're probably
HBO
right.
HBO basically didn't have a choice. You know, I mean, everybody else is gone with Al Heyman. So,
yeah.
All you have is, you know, all those fighters that go to like NBC and PBC networks and Showtime. So, all they have left is guys for. You know, whoever Loeffler has at K2 Promotions and then Golden Boy Promotions and Top Rank. So if you look at Top Rank's roster, they're basically done because they don't have any pay-per-view worthy guys there. Tim Bradley's not pay-per-view worthy. Rios. Who else they have over at Top Rank?
Pacquiao, the only one.
Yeah, so they're not at the level where they need to be to have a pay-per-view level guy to be the top bill. And Golden Boy basically is losing all their guys. They just had Lemieux lose. They just had Matisse get schooled. So they're basically at their last legs right now with Canelo. So what's that? And if Canelo loses, then you might as well forget it as far as HBO pay-per-view or HBO in general. They won't have anything left.
I think Canelo could lose and still be fine. You know, Canelo is such that who said that they thought Canelo would be the next to be the face of the sport? Like, I agree. Like, Canelo is very marketable. He has a fighting style. Like, he I don't see Canelo ever going into a fight and not trying to win. Like, the Floyd Mayweather fight earned a lot of respect from me towards him because, yeah, he was getting schooled, but he never quit. Like, he never stopped trying to win. And
right.
I don't know if he would beat Pacquiao, but I think he would give Pacquiao a good fight. I know that'll probably never happen, but I'm just saying.
Right.
Because I know he'll never stop trying to win.
Well, just to add to that, this is what you guys just spoke on is something that we talked about on the show at least several times in the past few weeks. With HBO going, I'm not saying going down. HBO is going to be there. They just at this point they have to reinvent themselves. Once again, the loss of Mayweather, in addition with the loss of Al Haymon as a matchmaker for them, has really, really hurt them. And the Triple G Lemieux fight, I'm not saying it had to be on pay-per-view, but for them, they need to make a new pay-per-view star. And that's what they're doing here. They're basically starting all over with their pay-per-view people and really their top-level fighters. Like you just spoke about, James, what's my man, Tim Bradley, like we talked about recently. So he's no longer a viable top guy at pay-per-view. They really have nobody that can hold a pay-per-view on their own except for a Canelo Cotto fight of that nature. Other than that, they have, and even with the chocolate, the black flyweight kid, Chocolate Gonzalez, whatever his name is, we know that people they tend not to respect and pay the money for the lighter weights. So HBO, once again, they have to reinvent themselves. And they've done it before. I trust they can do it again. They can find talent. It's talent out there to be found. It's going to be harder this time with the advent of the PBC and all those networks showing fights now because there's only so many fighters at that level. But once again, they are forced to reinvent themselves. So it's going to be interesting going forward. You know, really is.
The crazy thing is that they have a fighter waiting in the wings ready to be a pay-per-view star, Crawford. Put Crawford against Pacquiao and let him make a name off of Pacquiao. Unfortunately, they should do that because that would, that would automatically give him the credentials to be. Yeah, people probably won't flock to him like that, and he will probably not get fans just off of, American ways. But I think that's one of their stars that can flourish.
Well, the thing is that, I mean, that would kind of break the code with Top Rank because you haven't really seen anybody like a Crawford or when they had Mosley or when they had Floyd, where Top Rank puts those guys at the top of their, at the top of their list. I mean, they had those early talks about maybe Crawford facing Pacquiao, but now that thing has changed to Amir Khan or before he lost to Lucas Matisse or somebody like that. But I've never really seen Bob Arum really try to put those guys at the top of his stable.
Yeah,
they always
agree.
Have like somebody else. Always had somebody else. And the thing is that, I mean, Floyd Mayweather had to get bought out by Al Haymon in order to become the number one pay-per-view draw in the sport. And then, I mean, before him, you had Shane Mosley that was, still there within Top Rank, but he was able to get a little bit more money rolling with Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy. So I doubt that Bob Arum will let somebody like a Terrence Crawford become the number one guy, even though he's the best 140-pound guy out there right now. But they just won't put somebody like him on a pay-per-view or headline a pay-per-view. and they'll put something up as an excuse, like saying that, like, he can only have his fans over there in Omaha, Nebraska. They can't put him anywhere else and see if he's a draw there. But if you have him in a good fight against a good fighter, then people are going to watch that fight. You know, so that's one thing on that one. All right. Yeah, before that Golovkin fight against Lemieux, you did have Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez go up against Brian Valoria there in the flyweight division. And that one there was a very good fight. Valoria was game, but he couldn't, you know, he couldn't just stand the punishment of Chocolatito there. It didn't seem like Martinez was affected by any of the punches that Valoria had out there for him. And, you know, before that fight was stopped, Brian Valoria scored like a good, very good body shot on Gonzalez. And he tried to do a couple of things there while Gonzalez was trying to catch up. But after he caught up, that was basically it. The end of the fight was there. People are talking about him being the number one pound for pound guy out there right now. What do y'all think of Chocolatito?
Well, I think he's as good as advertised. I think the guy definitely likes to press the action. He it looks like he can throw all the punches, and comparing it to the weight classes that he'll probably be in coming up, he seems to have, you know, adequate or enough or more power. I'm going to throw a smart comment out just to mess with James on this one, but anybody can get hit with a body shot, you know, like the Keith Thurmans of the world. Yeah, they might have got caught with a body shot, but, you know, even an overmatched fighter in Chocolatito Gonzalez got hit with a body shot. It can happen to anyone, even the better fighters like Keith Thurman, you know, throwing that out there.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah. I mean every fighter, you know, kind of gets caught with a good shot here and there. It's all in how they respond to it. But I think that Gonzalez, even though he got caught with that body shot, but he also got caught with a couple of good punches too. I mean, the first two rounds, Valoria basically won those first two rounds against Gonzalez, and he was very active, throwing a lot of combinations, had a lot of success in there in the ring. It was just that Gonzalez was able to take those punches and just still keep throwing, and throw with accuracy too. He threw a lot of punches, but all of them were accurate. All of them were hitting the target, basically. So that's something that you know we haven't really seen in the lower weight classes. To me, I mean, he's easily there. I mean, actually, he's over there at super featherweight. Well, he has the world flyweight title right now. But now it's he has like a lot of competition there above him at super flyweight. Kohei Kono had a big win earlier this week against Koki Kameda, and they have the WBO champ Naoya Inoue, who's also a one guy that people are talking about amongst the pound for pound list out there. So it would be interesting to see what he would be able to, what Gonzalez would be able to do at flyweight, if he's going to stay there at flyweight or he's going to eventually move up to 115 pounds, to challenge people in the super flyweight division.
You know, James, that's actually a good point and a good segue to my point as well. I have no problem with Chocolatito being at the top of at the list, because right now there's no one else that's screaming that they deserve to be at the top spot. So he's solid. And like my man said from Bama, he can throw all the punches, all different angles, and got power at that weight class. But for me, what's going to solidify his place at the top of the rankings is going to be his level, his competition. What is the field of competition going to give him? And will he have to step up and wait, which he likely will have to do, like you just alluded to? For me, that's what will solidify him being at the very top. If you jump up to another weight class and bring those that same skill level up and bring and claim another belt. And to me, that's what will, like Pacquiao, for example. He rose the ranks. He rose the weight classes and got belts in numerous weight classes. And he dominated. So if Chuck Liddell wants to command that same type of respect, I want to see him do the same thing. But right now, I have no problem. I love this guy. And actually, I was actually pulling for glory in this fight. I really was. I've always been a fan of the Hawaiian punch. But that didn't happen this time. So good fight, though. Good fight.
I agree with you. I would say the same thing I'm about to say for Gonzalez that I would say for Golovkin. I have to see these guys face some type of adversity and perform when really facing some adversity. Yeah, it may not happen with the level of guys that they're facing, but before you can just crown someone and say that they're the best over everyone else, they have to have beat some challenge, you know, some adversity, have to have faced it, you know. Even with Floyd getting caught these random times, you know, 5 or 6 times throughout his career where we saw him get hit very clean and be visibly hurt, and recover within a matter of 10, 15 seconds of getting hit like that. You know, yeah, he's faced some a little adversity. He showed you how he performed, you know, performing flying colors and still win. That's why you can't dispute that. That guy's the best guy in the sport of boxing. Got to see it for Golovkin. Got to see it for Gonzalez before we just crown him, though.
Well, I mean, my thing was when I had posted it online on the CHC On Sports website there, that I had put in a new pound-for-pound ranking, and I put Gonzalez at number 2, and I put Rigondeaux at number 1 skill-wise, because skill-wise I had Rigondeaux at number 2 before Mayweather retired, and then with Mayweather retiring, I put him at number 1, but the thing with Rigondeaux was is that he hasn't had a fight lined up for him, and he hasn't fought all year. They've talked about him trying to fight different guys such as Vasyl Lomachenko and other guys out there, but nothing has, you know, been put forth or put into place for him. So with that inactivity on there, I'll have to change it and make Roman Gonzalez my number 1. And I think that, you know, Gonzalez and Triple G are basically at a hard spot because of their weight class. There really isn't, you know, anybody that could really challenge them in that weight class. So, to me, I think they would have to move up at least one division in order to get a good challenge out there. You know? I mean, that's basically my overall synopsis, because, I mean, right now, Gonzalez is already, you know, 43 or 44 fights in his career, and he's basically at his prime at age 28. So there's got to be, like, other challenges that he could have out there for him to, you know, get more recognition in the sport of boxing, as he would be able to collect more belts along the way, you know. We got like over 15 minutes left here on the live show. For those listening in on Blog Talk Radio, you can dial in 347-237-5539. Press 1 key to get on cue, be able to talk live on the show. There was one other fight that was on that card before the main event with Golovkin and Lemieux that featured heavyweight contender Luis Ortiz against the late ad, Matias Redondo, was for an interim heavyweight belt. Ortiz is undefeated at 22-0, and it looked like, you know, this was basically a last-minute addition if you ever seen one. I mean, Redondo looked like he was in there. He was out of shape. Wasn't really ready for what Luis Ortiz had for him. And Luis Ortiz basically, you know, blew him out in three rounds. He's basically within the top 20 right now. And he would have fought, I think it was either Stavern backed out or another Big Ten contender backed out of a possible matchup between, you know, with Ortiz there. So that might tell some people, like, how dangerous Luis Ortiz may be there in the heavyweight division. Greg, Mike, were you able to see anything there with him in that fight?
Yeah, but, you know, like you said, it was a last-minute replacement if you've ever seen one. So I can't even, you know, I don't recall him using a lot of foot movement. I don't recall him doing anything special to beat his opponent. I just remember, you know, the opponent was, you know, throwing punches the first round, and then he took it over and then hit him with a couple good punches and the fight was over. But I don't recall him, like, for the hype that I saw, I need to watch more fights. I'm going to say that. This is, I can get more of a assessment of him if I watch more fights, but I didn't see him do anything, like, extra special to warrant, like, you know, oh, I think he's ready for, you know, the bigger fights, other than them saying that he's won Olympic gold or something like that, or Olympic medal.
Right. Yeah, he didn't necessarily feature any good foot movement in there in the ring, because, I mean, when you go up against a guy that, you know that can't really hurt you, then there's not much of a point for you to utilize any type of defensive skills where you could, you know, move your feet or anything like that. So you're going to basically just punch at will or do anything you want in the ring at will and eventually get the knockout that you would need. Real quick, we got area code 916 on the line. What's going on?
What's up with it, man? How you doing?
Doing all right there, brother.
Okay, yeah, I just came in halfway through your conversation. What's going on?
Yeah, we're just going through real quick Luis Ortiz's fight that he had on the Gennady Golovkin-David Lemieux card, and we did touch on the main event and also Chuck Latito Gonzalez's fight against Brian Valoria. So if you want, you could just go through those fights real quick and what you thought of them.
You know, I had people over, so I wasn't really watching the Ortiz fight. I have to watch that again, but Chuck Latito, that's my guy right there, man. He did what he was supposed to do. I could tell that he can withstand diversity, you know, because I think he lost the first round, probably the first round and a half. But he came back and he was accurate, you know what I mean? And he was landing flush punches, and he ended up stopping the guy. I think there were a lot of early stoppages last night, but I think the people that were supposed to win won. I was watching the David Lemieux fight with Ndam the other day, and I really paid attention to it, and that kind of put in my mind that he was going to lose, you know, because, you know, I'm very observant. And I've seen that Lemieux, if you really pay attention to him, he's a left-handed fighter. He just fights in the orthodox. And Gennady basically neutralized his left hand with his jab. And Gennady has way more boxing skills than I thought he had. I thought Lemieux was going to get him with at least one good punch. You know, he got him with some good punches, but nothing that's going to knock a bull out. That's what I like to call it. If you can hit it hard enough to knock a bull out, then you got strong power. And Lemieux does have that power, but Gennady's defense is underrated, and I give him props.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
can I add to what he said?
What was that?
Oh, I was going to add.
Go ahead.
I don't, I don't think your defense has to be as spectacular if you have a jab. Okay, that's your defense. If you can jab, your offense is your defense. So I don't think his defense has to be as spectacular if he controlled the fight with his jab, because that's the only thing he really had to do, and that simplified the fight and pretty much solidified the fight before it even began, you know, just controlling him with the jab. And he has a strong enough jab to where, you know, nobody's just going to walk through his jab, and you feel a jab, and then you bring the right hand behind the jab or even just the left hook when you fake the jab. It, the fight was – Lemieux was pretty much made for him.
See, you know, I like the box. I like the box, and I'm a southpaw. And Golovkin's left jab has some extreme force on it. So, you know, like his jab is like really like a right hand, a straight right. And he was using it as his distance. He used it to gauge distance, and it was a beautiful display by Triple G.
I agree.
I knew him 100% he was going to win, but I thought if he was defensively responsible, that it was going to be really hard for Lemieux to beat him. I'm looking forward to him fighting Andy Lee or Peter Quinlan. I don't think that Cotto or Canelo are going to pose any threats to Triple G like that.
The first 20 seconds of me seeing him jab, I was like, okay, well, the fight is already over, and he's probably going to get a knockout just off of seeing, you know, the control that his jab pretty much had over Lemieux.
Yeah,
that
was
pretty much what I was thinking, too.
Triple G never really showed that the jab as a weapon in his arsenal before in previous fights. Look back to Woody Monroe. I mean, he had a good, solid job, but as a weapon, it wasn't really there. But for me, once again, I think that natural size that Triple G enjoyed over Lemieux came into play with that. He says, you just say, you know what, this guy's now on my level. I'm going to walk right through him with everything I got. So he clearly displayed that. So he did.
Yep.
Well, I think it was that, and it was also that Lemieux, the capability of Lemieux being able to hurt him. You know, with somebody that you feel is a threat, can be a threat if you allow them to, you know, meaning if you don't jab and you let them jab you and stuff, Lemieux can hurt you. But, you know, jab and take all that away, take his left hand away, take his confidence away, take everything away. It was
exactly.
It was over.
I believe in that as well. Like, they knew it was going to end in a knockout, and people thought that Gennady was going to go in there being reckless. If you listen to all the media coverage leading up to the fight, you would think that it was going to be a slugfest. And that played into Gennady's hands, because I think Lemieux went in there with that in his mind, and I think Abel Sanchez and Gennady knew they were going to box his ears off, and that's what they did.
True.
And one more point to make in regards to Triple G, and something that we talked about before with Golden Boy and even HBO losing footwork in the boxing realm today, the PBC. I'm just taking a quick look at another popular boxing website, and this is so funny. De La Hoya is already making the statement that Triple G and Canelo should fight. Now, first of all, Canelo has a fight lined up with Cotto, and this ain't no easy fight, you know. And once again,
I think from boxing skill, and if you consider both of these guys world class fighters, Canelo should go in there and dominate Cotto. He's younger, he throws combinations quicker, he has good boxing ability, but I think Canelo is lightweight overrated, because I could really see Cotto winning that one.
Well,
I was about to say, because I definitely am in the minority that believes that Cotto is going to cause problems, especially if the fight goes later. Yeah, early, okay, Canelo got steam, he can hurt him. But later, if the fight goes later, yeah, they will not give Cotto the win on the cards. But if the public eye, if the fight goes later, I feel like Cotto is going to win the later rounds. Somebody made a comment that Cotto doesn't have win or something. I don't see that. I think Cotto, you know, I love the way Cotto boxes. I love the way he moves around the ring. I love the way he steps over. I love the way he throws the left hook. I'm a Cotto fan, but if it goes late, I think Cotto.
And you got to take into account also that his cousin, who was, I don't know if it was his cousin or his brother, but it was
his brother.
Cotto.
Yeah, he
rocked Canelo with Cotto's best punch. I believe he was
with the left hook. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So if I think Cotto can land it on him, it's going to do way more damage, especially at the higher weight class.
One point
I don't want to miss is the fact that one last thing in boxing, when you already have a fight signed, you do not talk about the next opponent or proposed opponent. You just don't do that because you never know what happens. And even though I'm pulling for Cotto in this fight, because I'm reading this article now about the statement that De La Hoya is making that he wants to match up Canelo with Triple G, I want Cotto to knock his ass out straight up. Because this right here shows the desperation of Golden Boy trying to milk this little young kid for everything he's worth. And Canelo has a lot of time to get to the forefront, to the pinnacle box. He has a lot of time left. But at the same time, if this kid can go in too many wars before he's 30 years old, he's going to be shot. He's going to be like Angulo. He's going to be shot.
I'm kind of 50-50. I want Cotto to win because I respect his resume more, but I want Canelo to win because I know Canelo is going to fight anybody.
Well, who do you want to win?
When he fought Trout, he shot the best father. I know Cotto. If Cotto win and Golovkin is his mandatory, he's going to vacate that title. But then again, you know, like I said, it's 50-50 because I want, if Cotto wins and he vacates the title, I think he'll unify, but then he'll have to fight. If he wants another big payday, he can fight Andre Ward. And I think Golovkin don't want.
That's the thing about this overall fight. You know, it's basically Cotto Canelo is a 50-50 fight all across the board. I mean, ever since it was put together, it wasn't like, you know, an overwhelming amount of people picked Canelo an overwhelming amount of people picked Cotto. It's been split down the middle all across the board. And the thing is that if you're a fan of Cotto, you would roll with Cotto. Or if you don't like Golden Boy Promotions, then you roll with Cotto. Or if you see that Cotto may have run his course, then you would pick Canelo. And my thing is right now I'm still siding with Canelo because I just think his youth is going to be enough to, you know, frustrate Cotto. And I don't buy the whole difference with Freddie Roach being in the ring with Miguel Cotto. I mean, Miguel Cotto is pretty much the same fighter that he was back then. It's just that he just has Freddie Roach in the ring. That's all it is.
I agree with you 100%. Cotto, you can't teach a dog new tricks. Cotto is who he is. Freddie Roach didn't bring none to the table. What can you tell a dude who's been doing this professionally for 20 years and who's a multiple world title champion? And Freddie Roach, when he was a professional, he was getting his ass beat. He can't tell Cotto nothing.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing about it. I'm like, you can't really tell him much that he doesn't already know. And if you look over at Cotto's career, I mean, his losses have basically been against either guys that are longer than he is or those that have more power. And with
or those
Canelo, he might have
some
more.
Form.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's why I give Canelo, that's why I think Canelo should win. He's younger. He's naturally bigger. He has good speed, and he has boxing ability. He should win this fight. If he loses this fight, I can't respect anybody on his resume, especially since he won the world title that he has won. He got versus Matthew Hatton, and that dude is 140-pounder. So, yeah, I think this fight, Canelo's his career is on the line right now. If he loses this fight, It's a wrap for him, I believe, because I still think it's people that at 154, like Andrade, the Charlo brothers, these guys could possibly beat Canelo. But I get Canelo.
Oh, and how about I didn't know that? I didn't even know that Andrade fought the other night.
Yeah, he did. You know, but he don't make it no publicity because, you know, he'd be having them contractual disputes with his promoters and shit like that.
Yeah.
Well, James. Hey, James,
yeah.
Director, that's you. What is your opinion on a promoter, a top promoter, on top of this, proposing another fight, major fight, when your fight is already inked to a major fight? That's always a no-no. And usually the fighter does that when the fighter's looking ahead, but this time the promoter's the one looking ahead. And to me, that shows they're not doing nothing but trying to prostitute this kid out. And it's a shame.
Yeah.
And I think he will lose this Dakota fight. I mean, it's just, you can't do that. What do you think about that?
Well,
with all due respect, the promoter can't get in the ring and fight for you. So it don't matter what your promoter says.
Yeah.
If Canelo is thinking, oh, okay, I'm about to set up this million-dollar pay-per-view with Gennady, and he's not focused on the veteran in Cotto, he's going to lose.
But as we've seen with Canelo, if the fight goes to the cards, the promoter can make sure that he gets a 117 or 110 score when it shouldn't be that way. So
I can see that. I can see that.
If Cotto don't knock him out, because Canelo will win, you know, we'll be talking about Canelo's win over Cotto. That's why the promoter can talk about it, you know, a fight X amount of months down the line, because if Cotto don't knock him out, it's a foregone conclusion in my mind.
I've got respect for Cotto. He's a world-class fighter. If Canelo don't prepare for a world-class fighter, he's not going to make it to the 12th round anyway. They both got decent power, so, you know, you got to come with your A game.
I mean, my thing is that Cotto should be able to have the type of skills to beat a guy like Canelo, I mean, to beat someone like Cotto. When you have a boxers like an Austin Trout and Floyd Mayweather are able to beat Cotto, to me, they're basically the blueprints on how to beat Cotto. Margarito was just, you know, he just had loaded reps. So, I mean, if he didn't have those loaded reps, he probably would have lost against Miguel Cotto that first time. But somebody that
I don't believe in that, because I thought I had Margarito before the fight. I was telling everybody, Margarito going to beat this boy. You know what I mean? Because Cotto, he gets frustrated easily. You know what I mean? He was hitting Margarito with his best punches. It still was getting tagged up. It's not for us to say if he had the loaded wraps. He got caught with Shane Mosley. That don't mean that every professional fight that this man has had, he had those wraps. And he throws impunity. He threw so much that Cotto couldn't think. He had to either cover up or move out the way. And I give Margarito his points as a fighter, but I'm not going to taint that man's resume because I know what it is to get in that ring. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I like Margarito as a fighter, too. He's definitely a great fighter. But if you watch that fight again and watch how Miguel Cotto's demise happened, it happened so quickly. Like, it was like he was, in my opinion, he was winning the fight. I had to watch it again to be sure to on my opinion of that. But I don't think he got hit with enough punches, in my opinion, to where his reaction to of how he quit, it didn't seem like it went together to me. And then he got hit a few times in the fifth or sixth round, and then he just kept getting hit.
He was breaking Cotto down. I'm telling you, man.
He didn't hit him
in the
second
round. Cotto won the second fight is because fucking Pacquiao busted his cheek out. So, you know, that Cotto is left-handed just like Pacquiao is left-handed. So it was just target practice, and he got hit with one punch. His shirt started swelling up and bleeding. He didn't have a cut. He was bleeding out his eyeball socket. So how can you expect a man to win under those circumstances? You feel me?
Well, somebody got bricks. Another person got juice. I mean, I don't know what you can do with that.
I don't know about Pacquiao having juice. I mean, like they say, the power is the last thing to go, and Pacquiao lost his power real quick. But if I need evidence, man, I want to see that nigga get cocked. before I start assuming shit like that.
Mm-hmm. When you
knock out
Hall of Fame fighters and you run through Hall of Fame fighters that most other people aren't running through, either you're that exceptionally special and you continue doing that, or, you know, you do that during a certain period and then, you know, when stuff get hot, you stop doing that and you turn into I'm not going to say a totally different fighter, but you turn into a fighter who loses to Tim Bradley. You turn into a fighter who, you know, I mean, I guess you always have tough fights with Marquez. You turn into a fighter who couldn't knock out Chris Algieri. You know, you turn into a fighter who
couldn't knock out Brandon Rios.
Couldn't knock out Brandon Rios,
I mean, but it kind of makes sense if you think about it, because when you get older, you slow down. And when you look at Pacquiao, the only person he really knocked out with one punch was like Ricky Hatton. Most of the time, when he knocked Cotto down, he caught him with the speed, caught him off guard. When he knocked Marquez down in the first round, if you go back and watch, it was like they was not expecting those punches. But they didn't get up, and they didn't have what I like to call Bambi legs. It's just that speed, and he got all the slow down, so he wasn't landing those punches no more. I mean,
right.
I think his power did diminish. If somebody came out and said, okay, Pacquiao and Floyd, and they had conclusive evidence that both of them used steroids, I wouldn't be surprised. But if we got no proof, I'm not going to judge that man. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
True. I mean, that one with Pacquiao, I mean, it's basically, we'll probably find out later on, like long after his career is over, what, you know, really happened with him as far as, like, what he took and what he didn't take. I mean, because he did have that whole little fiasco with him and his shoulder that they were talking about before the fight with Mayweather. But, you know, other than that, he really has diminished as far as his skills as a fighter after, you know, his little thing with, I guess, moving back down from 154. So he had that loss against Tim Bradley for, you know, in that first fight. And then ever since then, I mean, he was 3-3 his last six fights. So,
come on, man. Don't say that Tim Bradley fight, the first one. That was robbery, and he didn't have no pistol on him. I watched that fight probably like 30 times, man, because I'd be like, wow, I can't believe Tim Bradley won. So I really go there, and if it's a deflector shot, I count it for that. If it lands flush, I'm giving him credit. If he misses, you don't get no credit. And Pacquiao
won that
fight.
How much credit do you give a person if they fight only 30 seconds in a fight versus somebody who fought for 2 minutes and 30 seconds? Which person would you say
It depends, because, you know, if I get punched in my face and your punch breaks my nose and I punch you and I just hit you in the forehead and your forehead get red but ain't nothing broken, I'm going to give you more credit for that punch that broke your nose. You know what I'm saying? And that's how I judge boxing, you know. You can throw 100 punches, but if only 5 of them land flush and you're hitting his arms, you ain't getting no credit for that. And if you can throw body shots all day. But if the body shot is set up to break you down, if you throw body shots and the dude still got his win, you ain't getting no credit for those body shots. And that's just how I look at it.
True.
The thing is, Tim Bradley was throwing body shots. And, you know, like, I feel like Pacquiao was slowed down. I can't say that definitively, but he was throwing body shots the whole fight.
And there was a difference. I can see that.
He broke his own ankle. How you break your own ankle and not even get hit with a punch?
By avoiding
like
somebody else's shot.
Right there.
By avoiding someone else's shot.
Yeah, but, I mean, Tim Bradley, he didn't get his ass whooped, but to me, in my humble opinion, he lost that fight at least 9-3, the way I scored it. It wasn't even close.
Was your sound on when you watched this weekend's fights on HBO when they were speaking highly of Gonzalez and both Golovkin? Was your sound on when you watched that when you watched those fights?
It was on. Yeah, it was.
Do you think that if someone who casually watches boxing and hears comments of, oh, it's so beautiful how he lands 20,000 shots, or, you know, Pacquiao throws a left hook, and, you know, Bradley is 5 feet away from him, but he throws so many hooks, and he's landing at will with the left hook, you know, that's propaganda. That's all they were saying during the first fight. Like, you know,
I mean, listen to Jim Lampley at all.
Say it again?
You know, Jim Lampley is that dude that's like, oh, man, he has an amazing facial structure and all kind of gay shit like that. That shit's going crazy.
He oversells stuff real bad, man. I'm like, come on, really?
But he only does it for certain fighters, though. He doesn't do it for Tim Bradley. He doesn't do it for...
I can watch a fight with the commentators on. I can watch it on mute, and it's going to be the same result. I'm not the type of person like, oh, Pacquiao beat Mayweather. If you watch it in slow-mo and you're standing on a headstand and you have a character,
yep. But all I know is watching the Gonzalez fight when he was fighting that boy and hearing the way they were talking, I was like, well, damn, I could have just sworn I saw this dude win the first round. And, you know, second round, I was like, this is pretty – you know, if he didn't win the round, it was a pretty close round. They're talking about, oh, yeah, he's just coming on the second round, and, you know, we can see him imposing his dominance. And, you know, the first two rounds, either he – I know he won the first round for sure, but the second round, he either had a close round or he lost a close round. It wasn't like no total dominance. And then they just saying, like, you know, he's, you know, just winning and winning by such a great margin. Eventually that started happening, but
from my experience, like – I like commentators who actually stepped in the ring. Like Roy Jones, he don't be on no bullshit. And I seen Daniel Jacobs and a whole lot of different matches. You know,
who's another one? Antonio Tarver.
Antonio Tarver, man, he all right, I guess. I mean, I'm not a big fan of him like that. I like Roy Jones because he tell you the truth. At least he thinks he's telling you the truth. Roy Jones doing some bullshit too. But he don't just be riding a nigga's dick just because they got a contract with HBO.
Well, what's funny about that, I love Roy Jones as a commentator, and what's funny, that Ghetto comes out at the homeroom moment, and I'd be like, man, this but he's good, though. He's good. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, a lot of times these networks will team up a veteran reporter with a color commentator that's someone that's been in the ring, your Tarvers, what's my man name, the kid in New York that what's my man
Malignaggi.
Name?
Malignaggi.
Yeah, there you go.
I like Malignaggi.
I think Malignaggi, that's my favorite commentator, Malignaggi, because he keep it real. He don't be on that bullshit either.
Yeah. But James, question for you.
Yeah.
So I'm reading another article, and Golovkin is basically saying that he doesn't want to leave 160 until he has all the belts. Now, what do you think of that? Two points. What was Bernard Hopkins' middleweight defense record at? Was that 21 defenses, I believe? And then on top of that, with Golovkin saying that he's not leaving 160 until he gets all the belts. And then on top of it, you said that Ward is moving up in weight. And like I said before earlier in this show, give me a very short list that at 160 or at 154 or 160 that can really compete with Canelo. And being the fact he wants to stay at 160, how would you think if he beat Hopkins' middleweight record? What would you think of him then?
Well, the thing with Golovkin, it was like I said earlier, he's really at a hard place because he's put into a pay-per-view spot prematurely because there really isn't anybody out there that's worthy of him fighting somebody to be a pay-per-view, unless if it's a Cotto or a Canelo or something like that, or an Andre Ward. But you have those other guys that are out there, the Andy Lees, the Daniel Jacobs, the Peter Quillens, that are still there within the middleweight division, where he could probably try to unify all of the belts at middleweight before even moving up, because I mean, bear in mind with Bernard Hopkins had all of those title defenses with one title for most of the time, and then it wasn't until he fought Oscar De La Hoya to where he was able to unify all the belts. So He had those, like, about, what, maybe 14 or 15 or so title defenses before he was able to unify the belts against, I think it was first with Felix Trinidad and then with Oscar De La Hoya. So, it might take the same amount of time for Gennady Golovkin to unify the middleweight championships now at this point. As far as him trying to move up, I think he needs to just go try to, after he unifies the titles, he should go up to super middleweight. I mean, there'll be guys there at super middleweight that he can fight. It's not like, you know, there's a shortage of guys there at super middleweight, and he's not going to wait for those guys that are at 154 to move up. Because he sure doesn't want to, he's not looking to fight Arislandi Lara. He's not looking to do that. And
why not?
He still have a couple
why
other
not?
Guys. I have no idea why he doesn't want to make that fight happen. I really
because
don't.
Lara would probably beat him.
That's probably the case. If Lara is able to fill out at 160 and still keep his skills, then he would be. That would be a great fight. That would be.
That'll
a great
be an
fight.
Ugly fight. Be an ugly fight, but yeah, good fight nonetheless, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, with him, he would either have to just wait to go up to, you know, super middleweight, where there is a possible matchup at super middleweight between him and I think it's Durrell, one of the Durrells that's out there, because he did face Andre Durrell in the Olympics, and he won in the Olympics, but that was like a controversial win for some people. Some people thought that Andre Durrell actually won that fight in the Olympics. So,
you know what's crazy to me, man, is like people so critical of Floyd Mayweather's record and saying he's not fighting the best. But come on, man, Golovkin, he's going to smash all them dudes. If you watch boxing, Floyd is losing. I think he could get Danny Jacobs. I think he could get Andy Lee. I want to see him fight. I want to see him prove his worth. You know, don't throw millions of dollars at this dude, and he's fighting dudes just like David Lemieux. He's fighting dudes he's supposed to be. He was supposed to win that fight. Fight somebody where he's an underdog and then win that fight, and then I said out my own mouth, GGG is pound for pound number one. People are already giving him that crown, and I don't think his resume backs that up.
Like
well,
I said, he needs to face adversity.
Only had one guy 160 that I want to see Triple G fight, and that's Quillen, Peter Quillen. I think that's, to me, that's the only realist guy with good natural size, natural power, and skill level that I can give him. Say, you know what? I don't want to win this fight. Anybody else?
I don't think Peter Quillen is getting past Danny Jacobs. Danny Jacobs got knocked out by
Quillen's
ability. Peter Quillen was damn near about to lose to Gabe Rosado, man.
But you know, everybody always has that one fight that they look bad in. You know, Mayweather looked bad against Corley, you know, and the list goes on. But I think Quillen's there. I think he's there.
Yeah, I definitely think if you were a betting man, I wouldn't definitely bet on Quillen against Golovkin. Yeah,
I wouldn't.
It's going to be bad for Quillen. I'm sorry. I definitely don't think Quillen can do it. Or who he fighting. He can't do it either. I don't think as many people. Jacobs can't do it either.
When Golovkin came out, he said he'll fight anybody from 154 to 168. Okay. Andre, well, you don't want to fight him? Or he fight James again. He'll probably beat Golovkin. I mean, find somebody who, if it's pay-per-view, you charging me $49.99, you charging me $60 for HD, and I got to put my glasses on just to see it in HD? Find somebody who I think is going to be the flag. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm like, to me, I mean, they got to see what else they could put that's worth having Golovkin on pay-per-view, though. I mean, other than Quillen, who else is out there that they could do that's possible? Because, like I said before, if Canelo wins this fight, that fight against Golovkin is not going to happen until the same time next year.
Nah, that shit happening. That shit happening single day mile, brother. Hey, getting that money.
It should.
I believe that.
It should. It should, but I don't think, I still don't feel that Oscar is going to put Canelo up in there against Golovkin right, basically right after a pay-per-view against Cotto. So that's why I say maybe wait out until next year. Or, I mean,
I think Oscar would, because Oscar got his ass kicked hella times and still was a pay-per-view draw. I think Canelo has such a strong fan base. If he loses to Golovkin, his fans going to still respect him because he moved up and he fought the boogeyman. You feel me? So I think Oscar that's what I love about Canelo. That's what I love about Canelo. He fight everybody. I didn't think he was going to fight Errol Spence. I didn't think he was going to fight him. That's him. Amir Khan at one point was two dudes that fought everybody. But after Danny Garcia knocked Amir Khan out, he started picking and choosing too. But I haven't seen that from Canelo yet. You feel me? And I'm going to give him his props until I see him duck. If I see him do the limbo, all right, I'm going to look at it like that. But he don't have to do that if he can still make 154. But Canelo ain't no punk. I give him that.
Nope, Canelo is not. I mean, he will fight anybody. He don't care. He will fight anybody. I've said that, you know, that Canelo Floyd fight, I mean, Oscar didn't want that, but Canelo wanted it, and Schaefer wanted it. So that's why that fight went ahead, because Schaefer and Canelo wanted that fight to happen.
When he fought Lara, when he fought Arizona de Lara, Oscar was trying to persuade him not to fight Lara. Canelo said, fuck that. I'm not fighting nobody next. I'm fighting Lara next.
The thing about that, though, Canelo can afford to not be afraid of anyone if you know you got Big Brother always protecting your back if the fight go to the cards. Like, like Canelo, and I think he has a great, like, that's why I mess with Canelo too, that he will fight anybody. But the Austin Trout fight, this should have been at least a tie. The Laura fight. Say it again.
I think. It was a tie with him and Trout. I was agreeing with you.
Yeah, Laura, like, I don't think Laura should have lost that fight. It should have been at least a tie, you know. Like, it's just he has Big Brother protecting him. So, yeah, he's not afraid of anyone. That kind of sucks. But, I mean, the dude, he a champion, so I can't take that away from him. He can't control just because he has Big Brother protecting him all the time.
Right.
So.
Basically, yeah. And I think that's why basically Commander thinking about Cotto having to knock Canelo out and not let him get to the scorecards, because if it does, then they'll probably just give Canelo the benefit of the doubt over Cotto in that case. So
we gonna see one crazy card, even if it's close. It's gonna be one crazy card, just that insurance policy.
Man, I just hope Andre Ward on that shit. Andre Ward need to get his life together, man. Get out there and get some publicity, man. Fuck having your own card. You better get on this card with Canelo and get some pay-per-view fans to see who you are.
He just needs to fight somebody.
He's fucking up his career, man. I don't like that shit.
He'll never be a pay-per-view star anyway, so, I mean.
He won't.
I guess he need to do it his way, because he'll never be a pay-per-view star. Like, it just, the American way, he'll never be.
No, because he's too nice. He's good, but if you're good and you're a born fighter, you got to talk shit. He's a good guy, and he's humble. So people are not going to pay to see Andre Ward jab you in your fucking nose all night.
Yeah,
the only way he can get to that popular level would be his performance in the ring, and that translates to either knocking people the hell out. And he doesn't have that in his arsenal at this point. You know, it's the same point that you guys made before, you know, you can switch to a new trainer, a.k.a. Bradley going to Muscle Man, Teddy Atlas, but you are who you are at this point. You know, you are who you are. And so Warren had to knock the hell out of some people. And he's not going to do that. He's not going to do that, you know.
So I agree with you guys when y'all say you are who you are before you got here, I believe in all that. But I think Teddy Atlas and Tim Bradley being together is a good thing for Tim Bradley. Tim Bradley, after that Pacquiao fight, got too, you know, crowd-centric and want to please people, want to please everyone. So he stopped fighting in the style that got him there, the style where he hit people and move and, you know, uses athleticism and win fights and win all these belts and beat all these people with the great resume that he has. And he started, like, you know, I want to please people. I want to rock 'em, sock 'em robots. And, you know, and he has thus far regressed stylistically. I think Teddy Atlas has been in his corner, teach him a few things, let him know you don't have to be in there that long. Win the fight. Yeah, people hate Mayweather, but he wins fights, and he's going to have his brain when he's like 70 years old to, you know, talk to his grandchildren and stuff. I think that's good for Tim Bradley. Yeah, he is who he is.
I agree with you 100% what you just said, but at the same time, for me to be 100% honest, you don't need Teddy Atlas for no damn Brandon Rios. I mean,
yeah.
I think Brandon can win the fight, but skill-wise, him is head and shoulders above Brandon Rios.
Yeah, but you got to start somewhere before you take a bigger fight. Like, they have to, like, they just can't, he can't go in there and try to fight Keith Thurman with this being the first fight with Teddy Atlas. Sure.
That wouldn't be a good matchup for Tim Bradley if we were up against Keith Thurman in that case. But something like where, you know, a guy like a Brandon Rios, or if he fought Provodnikov again, or somebody that's like a straightforward type of fighter, he'd be able to handle guys like that. But if they were like boxers, nah. I don't think Tim Bradley would be able to, you know, sustain the good offense against guys that can really box.
Yeah, me personally, I'm not a fan of this Bradley Rios.
You know what, fighter? But since we're speaking on Tim Bradley, he need to get up in there with that boy Amir Khan, man. That fight been brewing for so long. And
man.
I think Amir Khan would get him, though, to be honest.
But not earlier in his career.
You got to look at who's fighting
at 140.
Top ranked Golden Boy. It's not gonna happen.
Yeah, I know that, but that fight that's a natural fight to make.
Well,
yeah.
I know Tim Bradley will beat Danny Garcia. I feel that in my heart of hearts. And I'm going to make a bunch of money if that fight ever comes into fruition.
He'll beat him probably like Herrera did and fuck around and get robbed and shit.
Yeah.
It's something to consider. You're right. Because I guess he's more marketable than Tim Bradley, yeah.
Alright, so I'm pretty much winding down the show here. So, either you got like final thoughts about what happened over the past week, or something that's upcoming, like the fights that are happening this week. We should have Crawford.
Man, I just want to give a second.
So,
I just want to do. Can I give a second to give props to these boxers, because I see some fucked up news today. What's that dude named? Pritchard Collins.
Yeah.
Did y'all hear about that shit?
Yeah, Pritchard Collins. I missed the fight. Yeah. I don't know if he's still here in the area.
That shit was crazy because he walked out of the ring. He looked fine. And then next thing I know, his brain hemorrhaging. I'm like, man. And, you know, I don't want to disrespect when you call a motherfucker a bum or you say he's this type of fighter. When they go out there and they risk their lives. And this is a prime example. Just like that Russian heavyweight dude who fought Irish Mike Perez. That dude's life was ruined, bro. They had to cut a piece of his skull out to relieve his brain swelling up, bro. And motherfuckers just don't realize how deadly this game is, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely easier coming on it, not being in the ring. It's definitely a lot easier to do it that way.
Yeah. It's like Zab Judah said, like, weeks ago. He said, hey, you might be able to play football, or you might be able to play basketball or play baseball, but you can't play boxing. That's just something that you can't mess around with. So, you know, it gets to be a very dangerous sport. you know, very dangerous sport. So people got to be careful out there in the ring because they never, I mean, all of a sudden it could be a wrap for you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that shit was crazy, man. I just heard, like, he started throwing up, you know. He left, he went to the locker room, started throwing up, went to the hospital. Next thing you know, boy in a coma.
Yep.
And then they do the fight so wrong because they don't got no type of insurance policy. Their families got to come out their pockets just to make sure the dude stay alive. And, like, that Russian dude, he still ain't 100%. He still got to get pushed around in a wheelchair. But you got certain niggas who ain't never even put no gloves on who want to call that dude a bum. That's what I think is fucked up with the game. Like, you know, boxing is my favorite sport, man. And it's just like a nigga lose one time and all of a sudden he's a bum. And I think a lot of respect, it needs to be more respect given to these boxers.
Yeah, true. I agree.
True. Well, on that note, folks, I'm going to close out the show. Y'all can catch the show every Sunday night at 7:30 on Blog Talk Radio. Here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel, we do have sister shows where we have the Cold Hard Truth on Sports Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m., and we have the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show on Wednesday nights at 8:30 p.m., so you can catch those. Next week will be another show, same time, same channel. And like I say at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, folks, I'm out. Have a good evening.
All right. Y'all be cool.
Thank you.
Later.